violation of the rights of free speech and free press guaranteed to the respondents by the First and Fourteenth Amendments to the Constitution of the United States. Six, the finding and judgment of the court deprives the respondents of their liberty and property without due process of law in violation of the rights guaranteed to them under the Fourteenth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Seven,
as observed, we are not concerned with that question here. We are
That is to say, if the court's right as regards persons connected with the trial is absolute, it is conceivable that if one of those persons falling under the ban would make a statement out of court, an extrajudicial statement, to the effect that the accused is being well treated, he is given cookies and tea every afternoon, and fried chicken for supper, that person could be held in contempt by the court because he is a member connected with the trial of the case, he is a part of the court process, and could be held in contempt because of the technical violation of having made a statement with regard to the treatment of the accused. Let me remind the court, I do not say that is the law, I say there is that possibility, but we are not concerned with a statement made by a person participating in the trial. Even if that were the law, we are here concerned with the court's right to punish a reporter, a member of the press, and that is, of course, the right of the court to cut off from the public the right to hear the news. Now then, second, there can be no doubt as regards to the press that the court's right to punish is limited by the pronouncements of the Supreme Court of the United States, wherein they have established clear and present danger rule. And the court, of course, is quite familiar with that and remarked upon it in the court's opinion. And the court observed in the opinion that the court was of opinion that these statements allegedly published by the reporters did, in the court's opinion, constitute a clear and present danger to the selection of an impartial jury to try the case. Impartial to whom? Impartial to the accused or impartial to the state? If we consider first whether these statements would constitute a clear and present danger to the selection of a jury, which would be fair and impartial to the accused, certainly I believe the statements with regard to the light, the television cameras, and the guards would hardly be calculated to prejudice the accused selection of a jury. If it be argued that these comments published to the general public might cause potential jurors to be so incensed at the actions of the state in subjecting the accused to this treatment, then we would say, if the state has the same believe that lights were shining and that guards were looking upon him and the television cameras were upon him. The court took the view that those conditions were not unreasonable, that there was nothing horrible about those conditions. Now, certainly, I could see that if a story were published in the paper which said that employees of the state of Tennessee are beating the accused in his cell, giving the accused drugs in an attempt to extort a confession from him, that things of that sort could so incense the public that when you went to pick out a fair and impartial jury, jurors who had read those stories might be so incensed against what the state had been doing to the prisoner that they might be inclined to turn the prisoner loose. So there I perceive that there might be some clear and present danger to the selection of the jury. But by the same token, if the newspapers printed a statement to the effect that we were advised as regards the treatment of the prisoner, that he is being well treated, is being given tea and cookies in the afternoon and ice cream for dessert, certainly that type of report to the general